Ready? Go. Ugh. Well, hello, everybody. It's all one word. And it's 9:15 on Friday the 30th. Payday. Yay. So this time last week, I think we'd waved goodbye to Adrian at TurboStream after completing our trek of Hadrian's Wall, Dean Reed and I. Adrian had picked us up from Whitley Bay and he took us back to my parents where we had something to eat, and he left us after a couple of 3 hours to go back to Carlisle to stay with his uncle. And I'd mentioned last Monday there that I'd do a bit more of a full summary of that adventure that Dean and I and certainly Adrian on the first day had. So whilst I entertain the dog here, I throw in the ball with one of these ball chucker things. I shall tell you a bit more. So, in the beginning, well, for a great many a year, I've wanted to walk Hadrian's Wall. I'm originally from Hexham in Northumberland, so only not many miles away from Hadrian's Wall. Not many miles at all. And as a child, learnt about the Roman conquest, learned about the building of the wall and visited the wall and various visitor centres along the way. And then when I was a bit older, in the scouts, walked along the wall a few times and indeed walked along it, out of my own interest as well. But this time round, I really wanted to do it fully. And so last September, I had the idea that, I came to the conclusion that I was going to do it, and I was going to do it this year, 2014. So without a date really set, because we were waiting on a few things happening. Yeah. Kind of made my intention public. Was it December? I think I might have been talking about stuff I was going to do in the new year. And so, I said I was going to do this thing. And those who can cast their mind back, I said, I was kind of going to do it by myself. I was quite happy to do it by myself. And so in January, Dean contacted me privately and he says, I'd like to come with you. I explained a few things and I said, and he was like, no, I understand that you want to do it and that. And, he said that he was quite happy to work with me all along the way of whatnot. So we arranged in that September to talk on January to talk on FaceTime, and we had this 4.5 hour FaceTime conversation during which we planned the whole thing. How far we were going to walk, where we were going to stay, this everything. We planned everything, including a date. And Dean very kindly booked a couple of the nights' accommodation. Come here. And so it was set. We were going to go. We were going to start walking on my wife's birthday, Monday the 19th of May. So the plan was, and as was executed also, that we would travel up north. I would get the train to Chesterfield, something which I actually only confirmed in the last kind of couple of weeks, really. I get the train to Chesterfield, Dean would pick me up, and we'd drive up to Hexham on Sunday the 18th, and we'd stay at my parents for the night, And the next day we get the train from Hexham to Carlisle and the bus from Carlisle to Bowness on Solway. And kind of during the probably end of February, beginning of March, something like that, Adrian Wicks contacted me and he says, I'd like to walk a section with you if that's permissible. He says, I've got an uncle who lives in Carlisle, so I can walk the first day with you. You know, if you're going from Bowness on Solway to Carlisle, you know, I can peel off at Carlisle and then leave you two on your way. So I said, yeah, no worries whatsoever. Dean and I had booked accommodation that was very particular. So insofar as the first night we were going to be camping at Bleaton Farm, the second night we were supposed to be wild camping in the region of Steel Rig. Third night we're going to be staying in a micro lodge. And the fourth night we were staying in the Albatross Backpackers Inn on Granger Street in Newcastle. So before I go into this any further, what you may need to do if you're listening on you know, on a device that you can pull up a map on, is probably get a map up of the Roman Wall, and you'll be able to kind of follow me a little bit better. But I'll try and describe as much as I can and about where we were. So the first day was Bowness on Solway to through Carlisle and a few miles on outside of Carlisle to a place called Bleaton Farm, which is actually just north of Carlisle Airport. And so we give us that ball, come here. And so we set off walking. I was carrying about 22 or 23 kilograms worth of kit, and I think Dean was probably 8 to 10 kilograms lighter than me on his back. That didn't bother me at all. Carrying that kind of weight didn't bother me, and it doesn't bother me whatsoever. I'm kind of conditioned to carrying that kind of weight anyway, so that didn't bother me. I was wearing, however, on my feet, my fairly new Mammut mountain boots. Dean is a great advocate of these boots, and I am also. However, I had only walked about, 65-70 mile in these boots. So it's not, I don't think it's a case of that they're not broken in. I think it's a case of my feet are not used to them. So the Monday, it was beautiful weather. So we set off at Bowness and Solway, and it was probably about 10:30 in the morning, something like that. About 10:30 on the Monday morning. And I did know that the first day would be pretty boring as far as scenery goes, and we weren't going to see any of the wall, certainly until partway through day two, potentially the latter half. I did know that from a map appreciation. So we were walking west to east. We walked about 12 kilometres along the tarmac, really. The majority of that bit was on tarmac. And we stopped for something to eat, and Adrian and I took our boots off. Our feet were hot, and I was really concerned for myself. I didn't feel wholly comfortable. I wasn't in a bad way, but I just didn't feel as comfortable as I would like to have done in the old foot department. So just as we stopped at a little kind of you would probably think it was a bus stop, but it wasn't. It's a little sheltered area and a little picnic bench for people walking along the Solway. So just as we packed up, ready to get going, it started raining. And as soon as we put our waterproofs on, it stopped. So, and then it got very humid. Sun came out and it was stinking hot. It was very, very humid. It was quite uncomfortable. And so that humidity carried on for a good couple of hours. And we got a sprinkling of rain a little bit later on as well, and kind of the same detail. Got a bit humid, a bit uncomfortable. By the time we got into Carlisle, we walked through a park called Bits Park. Really, really nice park. And we stopped at a petrol station and we had to get some fluids down us. It was hot. It was uncomfortably hot. That would have been the point that Adrian would have peeled off to go back to his uncle's. His uncle living from the very place that we stopped, quite literally 3 minutes walk. But he had decided about 5 miles prior to that to continue on to the campsite with us, which admirable, very much so. So we kind of came out of the city and the tarmac road, eventually went down to a track and eventually went down to a footpath, and we walked the final half a mile up to Bleaton Farm, where we saw the start of the wall, just a raised kind of, you know, bump in the ground, and we walked along it. Bleaton Farm itself and the campsite was only about 100 metres off the actual Hadrian's Wall path itself, so it was lucky. Really nice little campsite, quite small, only not 100 metres long, and not 50 metres wide either, and a few hard standing places for caravans or caravettes with power supply, and a handful of spaces for tents. So also there, quite luckily for us, was a cabin, like a Corrimac, with a shower rain and toilets and a basin, and also outside they had a couple of sinks to wash your pots and pans and some bins. And it was gleaming, it was absolutely spotless, that kind of Corrimac thing that was there. It was really nice, and it was heated as well, so that was a bonus. I took the opportunity to wash a couple of items of clothing that I'd worn that day, just for the sake of it not smelling. And I'd left them in there overnight, which dried them to a good extent, but because the heating in that place went off overnight, they didn't dry. Never mind, the next morning I put them on a fence and they were almost dry. So Dean and I set off the next day, and about a third of the way into the day, it was apparent that I was going to suffer. My feet were really sore. It was like walking on with bricks tied at the bottom of your feet. And we kind of put a few contingency plans into place. So to cut a long story short, what eventually we did was, I called my dad and I said, can you meet us at a place called Walton? And at that point, he would take a lot of weight off my back. So we stopped at a tea rooms at the back of the church in Walton, which is still inside Cumbria. We met up with a woman called Casey, an American lady, who we'd actually bumped into the previous day. Quite literally, just for seconds, talked to her. She walked past and she asked us, on the latter part of the Monday, with about a mile and a half to go, if we were walking the way. Are you walking the way? And so we met up with her again, and we had a cup of tea with her, and she's from California, and forgive me if I'm wrong, Dean, but I think she was from California, probably about 60 years old, fit in the sense of kind of walking. We saw a rucksack outside, and a rucksack was labelled 55 plus 10, which would signify 65 litres. And when she had it on the back, it looked a lot bigger than that, but that's because she was probably short. She's only about 5'5" or something. Really nice, lovely lady. Should have maybe taken her email address, Aideen. Never mind, she's got our email addresses, and so hopefully we'll get in touch. Anyway, so my parents turned up, and what actually happened is they took my big green rucksack off, and swapped it round with my red day sack. And at that point, you know, my wife had been in touch, and she said that she was sending up my Salomon boots on an overnighter to be delivered by 9 a.m. in the morning. So as the plan was going at that point, we would meet up with my dad later on in the day at the end of that walk, and we wouldn't be wild camping, but we'd be spending the night at my parents' in readiness for my boots turning up, my other pair of boots turning up in Hexham the next morning. So the rest of the day was pretty hard going on for me. I felt quite embarrassed that I would stop maybe every 3 miles, maybe. Yeah, about every 3 miles I had to stop and take my boots off. My feet were in tatters. And again, cutting a long story short, we actually cut that route short, stopping at Greenhead on the other side of Gilsland, on the east side of Gilsland. We stopped at Greenhead where my dad picked us up and brought us home. The latter part of day two, we're starting to get into some beautiful scenery, some beautiful... Gilsland is the border between Cumbria and Northumberland, and you know, around that time we're starting to see the you know, much more undulating ground, much more moorland on the north side. A beautiful area, really. A bit remote, but you know, as to live there, but still really nice. So we cut the day short and went back to Hexham, where we had a good feed. I was starting at that point to use a lot more energy because of a change in posture whilst I was walking. So about 1 o'clock or 1:30 in the morning, something like that, the pain in my heels with what was now, it was blisters now. Not just blisters, but I'm going to go as far to say wounds. We're talking about blisters that were maybe 6-7 meters high by 4-5 centimeters wide, so pretty nasty, really. The pain was so much I decided to take some action and stuck 2 pieces of Compeed over each blister, taped with zinc tape around them, and then an Elasto sports bandage over the top and some painkillers, and I slept. Boots turned up at 8:40 the next morning. So got the boots on the feet. Dad dropped us off where he picked us up, which was Wallgate. Oh God. West, anyway, just west of Caulfield's Crags. So anyway, went over there. Went over Caulfield's Crags, got to Steel Rig, where my dad met us again. He met us in between there, but my dad met us again, and he says, "Right, that's it. You know, are you okay to continue on by yourselves?" And I was like, "Yeah." This was day three. This was the biggest day. Now this was what I've been selling to Dean for months was the best part of the wall, insofar as the quality of it, and as in what was left and what was there, and also the scenery. When we got to Steel Rig Car Park, I checked Viewranger and I was tracking. But when I got to Steel Rig Car Park, I realised that we'd walked already 10 kilometres. I think it was probably 10.82 kilometres that morning. So that we'd already done 10 kilometres even before we started the day's walk. And we already knew that day three's walk was going to be 23 miles anyway. So, a rough estimate, it was going to be no less than 23 miles. So add 6.5 miles onto that, and you know, you're coming up to the 30 mile mark, aren't you? So, bit of a tall order ahead of us. we walked along the wall. If you've never been to Hadrian's Wall and you intend to go, or you really want to go, I'm telling you now, you will enjoy this bit. If you go to Steel Rig and walk east to Housesteads, which is about 3.5 to 4 miles, you will enjoy it. It's very undulating. Some bits are very nearly vertical, but you're going to see some beautiful scenery, and you are going to see with the best part of the wall. Trust me when I say that. So it was it undulated quite a lot. We took in the sights of Crag Loft, which is the little the tarn at the bottom of Steel Rig, and also the dip which goes down into Milecastle 39, and the dip which goes down into Sycamore Gap, made famous by Kevin Costner and his band of Merry Men. How they came off the boat in Dover, and in the next scene, in the next minute, they're on the Roman Wall, you know, some 300 odd miles north. I don't know. But there's that scene, that famous scene where the little boy gets chased up the tree for allegedly killing the deer. And so Nottingham's men are chasing after him at the start of the film. And then down the next dip where the Pennine Way, which we've been walking on, the Pennine Way follows the wall for about, eight miles. So down at the dip where the Pennine Way peels off to is it Ledgate? I think it's Ledgate. And we continued on just past Housesteads. Dean filled up from a little burn, which actually was also the site of a Roman well, which so very poignant that he should fit. I mean, you can't use that now because it's all mankied up, but on the other side of the wall, you know, just 3 meters away from this well, you know, you can readily get the water. So Dean filled up his water thing from there, ready to use his Sawyer squeeze filter, and we went a few hundred meters on into a little copse where we'd already decided we were going to stop for something to eat. So we stopped there, had something to eat, and carried on. The weather was beautiful. Oh, it was perfect. At times it was a little on the warm side. It was a little close. And I remember that. I think it was coming out of, you know, that copse just outside of Housesteads, and maybe a mile on, and Dean and I went up this bank that just seemed to go on forever, and at the top we both like, that was a bit heavy, and the weather also kind of affected us insofar as, you know, the heat took it out of us. Yeah, it was that ball. And so we carried on. We didn't really stop all of that much, to be honest. I mean, we didn't eat again until we got away along the wall, and we were just above the village of Wallick, spelled W-A-L-W-I-C-K, which is only about a mile from Cholerford, and in between Wallick and Cholerford, you've got the Roman settlement of Chesters, which, if you can ever get to, you must visit. It's a really big site, really interesting. So what we decided, we stopped just above Wallack, and we'd had a good half an hour's lie down, and we said, right, look, we are at least 12 miles away from our end destination. Let's get a proper feed instead of eating the rations that we had. Let's get a proper feed at the George Hotel at Cholerford, and we can carry on. So we got to the George, must have been around about 8 p.m, maybe before that, actually, maybe just a little bit before that, and nobody at reception. So we walked it to the restaurant. There's us with all our hiking gear on, looking like hobos. And one of the kind of waitresses came out and said, is everything all right? I says, is it possible to get food? You know, we've seen the sign, the banner on the side of the place saying you do bar meals. Yes, yes, yes. Would you like to come in and sit in the restaurant? So I peeked my head around the corner into the restaurant. He says, reenacting that now in the middle of this playing field. And there was about 50 old people in there, obviously on some kind of bus trip. And I said, do you think we'd go and sit outside? Yeah, yeah, okay. She says, yeah, no dramas. You just go through that door over there. What? That door there? Yes, that door there. The door that was on the opposite side of the restaurant from us, right in the middle of that kind of opposite wall. So I was like, you want us to walk through the middle of this restaurant dressed like a couple of hobos? Yeah, if you want, yeah. I was like, okay. So we did so, and as Dean and I walked through there, you know, all you needed was the string quartet to kind of immediately stop playing. Everybody stopped what they were doing and looked around at us. Never mind, it was quite funny. We ordered from the menu. I had a lamb shank. Dean had a steak. And boy, did I need that. It was, fortunately, there was tons of meat on it. And so we set off as the sun was dipping down on the horizon. We set off from Cholerford. And it was a beautiful night. It was warm. It was actually still warm. I was only wearing a t-shirt that day. And so we set off. And went straight up Brunton Bank. And I know that area quite well because my godmother used to live at the top of Brunton Bank. And a good friend of mine lived next door to her. So I know that area quite well indeed. And so the sun went down and we kept going and we kept going and we kept going. And we contacted the lady who owned the micro lodges and said, we ain't going to be there until about midnight. And as it turned out, we didn't get to the micro lodges until 1:15 in the morning. So that was from 10 o'clock in the morning until 1:15 the next morning that we were walking for. And, you know, we really did only stop for a grand total of about 2¾ hours that whole day. So pretty pooped by the time we got there, having walked along the road for about 5 miles. And so, you know, with no real undulation in the ground, the last bit on the main road was up quite a bit of a steep hill, and then we came off the road and walked for about 2 miles to get to this bloody micro lodge place. Northside Farm, I think the place was called, off the top of my head. Northside Farm Wigwams. Where they get wigwams from, I don't know, because they're not wigwams. So anyway, we turned up 1:15 in the morning, and we were to go into the apple tree, the one named Apple Tree. So I'd already had a conversation with the woman, and she says, yeah, yeah, the key is going to be in the door. The bedding which you've ordered is going to be in the micro lodge. Jobs are good. And that was confirmed in email. It was confirmed on the phone. Oh, I walked into Apple Tree flipping micro lodge, and there was 3 blokes in there. We must have the wrong one. So we hunted round, and in green gauge, there was a key in the door. So we went in there, and there was no bedding. No bedding whatsoever. Tried to phone the woman, no answer. Went back to those 3 lads. No, we've booked this one. We blah blah blah. They weren't going to get out and sort it out, were they? They were obviously in our sleeping bags and on our pillows. Never mind. We were too tired to argue. So I changed all my clothes because I was just soaked with sweat. We battened down the hatches, and there was an electric heater in there, so we turned the heater on, heated the place up, and actually I was dead to the world. As soon as my head, I used two mattresses as a pillow and put my fleece jumper on and my Gore-Tex jacket over the, well, event, but you know, put my waterproof jacket on over the top, and I was out like a light. So we got up the next morning, and the farmer came round. Some feeble excuses from him, you know, about why we didn't have bedding, whatever. I don't really care now. But we packed up and set off on our way. We walked about 50 metres and I turned around to Dean and I said, my heels are not good. I cannot go on. I forced myself. I'm telling you now, I think I need to sort this out. Let us go back into the kitchen area, this communal kitchen area, with some comfy seats, and I'll redress my heels. And as I took the bandages and the zinc oxide tape off, the first thing that got to me was the smell of I don't want to go as far to say gangrenous, but it was stinking. It was a rotting kind of, oh my God, I thought, that's it. I'm going to have to be amputated from the neck down to fix this. So they were very, very sore. The blisters, the wounds had just absorbed the compede, and the compede had turned into a soggy mess. So I cleaned them as much as I could. I was in a lot of pain. And I'd also felt as though I'd bruised my heels at the bottom as well, because it wasn't just, it was painful to kind of touch the better areas. You know, it was so painful around my heels. So I said, I have to make a command decision here. I have to go to hospital for this now, Dean. Dean was very understanding. I said, listen, I am not stopping. I'll get these sorted out and we'll go again. And, you know, Dean was very, very good with it all the way. So my dad came and picked us up and dropped me off at Hexham General. I was there for about 3 hours or so. I'd been triaged where they cleaned it up, went back in to see a practice nurse. Practice nurse was very sympathetic indeed. She understood, you know, I said to her, look, I want to carry on doing this. She was, okay, no, not a worry. She applied these brand new Staley burns dressing, because obviously blister is a friction burn, isn't it? So she applied these burns dressings and explained they were like the new version of Compede in the surgical world. Come here. And give me some antibiotics. Now, the wounds have become infected, and so much so that as she was examining me, she was pressing on up my calf, specifically on the right hand side, and she says, does this hurt where I'm pressing? So she was about halfway up my calf, and I said, yeah, it is actually. She says, yeah, the infection's travelling up your leg. Oh, not good. So I was prescribed a penicillin based antibiotic, which kind of worked straight away, really. It kind of started kicking in. Anyway, back home, got something to eat, squared myself away. We were back in the car, and my dad dropped us off at Harlow Hill, which is where the wigwams are. I say wigwams, the micro lodges at Harlow Hill. And at 4 p.m., we set off again. So we had about 15 miles to go to walk into the centre of Newcastle. So we walked through Harlow Hill to Heddon on the Wall, and from there the Hadrian's Wall path drops right down onto the Tyne itself, and we followed the Tyne all along, and we got into Newcastle. It was dark by the time we got there. Obviously it was 10 o'clock when we arrived, but we walked along and we and turned a corner, and there were some beautiful views of all of the bridges in Newcastle. There, you know, the two railway bridges, the Metro Bridge, the Redhuth Bridge, Tyne Bridge, and of course the Millennium Bridge. Beautiful, beautiful views. It was a really calm night. We had some good light, and we got some nice pictures actually. So we came off there, went up onto Granger Street, which is just goes up from the railway station to the Albatross Backpackers Inn. I highly recommend that place. The member of staff that saw us in was very clear and assertive. He was a young guy, and I was really pleased with the way that he dealt with us. Actually, we went up to the place was immaculately clean. We went up to our room, which was immaculately clean, and it was a fairly small room in the grand scheme of things, but it had a double bed in it. It looked brand new to me. The double bed was really strong. It was, you know, it was a good quality thing. The bottom bunk was a double mattress, and the top bunk was a single mattress. But it was so cool. And we got our pillows and bedding and duvet. So basically, what we did was we just dropped our kit. I went straight back out, went on the top of the big market, which was just a minute's walk really. And we went to an Indian restaurant and had a curry, a couple of pints, and went straight back to the Albatross, went to bed. Got up in the morning, we were wondering where to get something to eat, and right next door was Mark Tony's cafe. And I remembered, actually, just before we left, I just clicked. My mother and I used to go to that cafe whenever we got the train into Newcastle. We'd always she would have a cup of coffee at Mark Tony's before we got the train back home to Hexham. So it was nice to be there. I mean, I can't remember it specifically, but I just remember, oh yeah, Mark Tony's just up from the railway station. So really good, good value for money, full English breakfast in there with a nice cup of coffee, and that set us on our final journey. As we set off back down Granger Street, well, just off Granger Street, down a place called The Side, down onto the Tyne again, which is just a few minutes walk really. I spotted a couple of Port of Tyne Authority people at the top of a jetty, and I thought, I'm looking up the river, you know, I was mindful of the fact that I know the touristy boats go up and down the river, and I thought, it's early, but maybe they start about now. I thought, there's nothing coming, what the hell's going on here? As we got down and we got to them, a police car stopped next to us, a couple of coppers got out, another police car drove up the curb and nearly knocked us over, and I said to Dean, I said, I bet there's a body in the river. Sure enough, on the jetty was a nice Sunseeker boat. As we walked alongside, I mean, it was down on our right hand side, but as we walked, got level to it, I looked inside and I said, to Dean, there's nobody slumped over in there or whatever. But the coppers and the Port of Tyne Authority members kept walking to the end of the jetty, and in between the jetty and the river wall, which was a gap of only about 2 foot wide, was a body floating in the river face down. I initially thought it was a man because the size of the body, you know, wearing blue jeans and a top. I couldn't see the head because the shoulders and majority of the torso were in the water. I could only see like kind of the lower back and backside and sticking out the water. And so, to cut a long story short, well, not a long story short, but to kind of flash forward, my mother texted me later on that night or that day and said it was a missing Asian woman, and these were this must have been the Asian woman on them, like handmade signs that we'd seen all along the Tyne, all up the Tynes, stating that this woman was missing, so it must have been her. Yeah, Molly. Anyway, that was that. So as we walked along the Tyne, the drizzle started. The drizzle started and it got heavier and heavier and heavier. We had about, we didn't know at that point, I didn't know at that point, but a few hundred metres short of Wall's End, which is the end of the Hadrian's Wall path, we were going to be walking under this bridge that went over the path, and there was a guy with his back to us puking, and I said to Dean, I says, oh, it'll be a tramp, you know, under a bridge, same old, same old. As we got closer, clearly wasn't a tramp, we got up level to him, and it was a fairly young lad, you know, in his late teens. I asked him if he was all right, and he said that it was because he was a big lad and he'd been riding from Jarrow and going down to Walker on this bike, and it was just quite a funny thing to see. So we walked a few hundred metres on, and I'm looking at my phone, looking down at my phone, with the drizzle coming in fairly heavy, and Dean says, "Hey, up!" And I thought it was just, it was a bike or something coming along the path, and I looked up, and there was the tower at the visitor centre at Segedunum, which is the Roman settlement that was the end of the wall. And it was an instant moment of elation, but I felt a little bit sad as well. I felt sad for two reasons. One, the adventure of the Roman wall, the Hadrian's wall path itself was over. I knew we had a bit more to walk, but secondly, that was going to be the end of it. Very shortly after that, we maybe had a couple of hours to go, and that was the trip done, and which I'd thoroughly enjoyed, even though we'd been through some trials and tribulations along the way. And so we intended only to go into Segedunum for like coffee and cake. There's a cafe up there, up high actually, up in the viewing tower. Because it costs you to go around Segedunum. It's run by a private firm. but we didn't. We had a baked potato each. And we carried on. This is where we changed our plan a little bit. The original plan was to go from Segedunum along the Tyne to Tynemouth, and then turn left and go up north up to Whitley Bay. But what we actually did was miss the Tynemouth bit out and walk directly from Wall's End to Whitley Bay, which was a hard slog because it was through housing estates and through past industrial estates and shopping places, and it was pretty boring, you know. It was boring, you know. It was just traffic, and you know, it was hard on. I found it really hard on my legs, and it was kind of, there was uphill gradient really for flipping about 4 miles until we got to Monk's Heaton, and we went down from Monk's Heaton into Whitley Bay. And it was virtually raining. It was really, really heavy drizzle. And we walked in between the War Memorial and the Spanish City down to the sea front, and got a couple of pictures down there. And we turned around, and we kind of, because we'd obviously already arranged to meet Adrian there. You know, we said we'd meet Adrian at the Spanish City. Yeah, Molly. And so Adrian showed his little smiley face covered in rain. He was dripping wet, and it was the drizzle was just too heavy to do anything decent. We didn't want to stick around. We were just at my jacket was just not waterproof anymore, and I was soaking wet all the way through, but elated, happy, you know. I wasn't discouraged at all by the weather, other than, you know, it would have been nice to stop to have a bit more of a look around, but with fatigue, with the weather, with time getting on, we decided to just get in Adrian's car and go. Adrian had been tracking us via shireadventure.com, so he knew where we were, basically. We kind of just slipped past him. So we got into Adrian's brand new pocket rocket, the Skoda Fabia VRS, which is a lovely little car, a little pocket rocket. And we drove along the Hexham, and we had something to eat. Adrian went on his way, and then you know, Dean and I talked with some parents for a while, and the next morning was straight into the car, straight back down to Chesterfield. I had about an hour's wait at Chesterfield railway station, and the train back home via London. That bloody crossing at London, I hate it. Going from King's Cross, Waterloo, I hate that exchange. We'd stopped on the car journey on the way down, where I dropped off my big green rucksack with my brother-in-law in Thirsk as he was visiting on the Sunday. So I only had my red day sack to carry, which was nice. So that was the end of the adventure. And I took a lot of GoPro footage. I took just over 3 hours of GoPro footage. And what I've done so far is I've just loaded the raw rushes. I've just stuck them on a timeline and I've put them all on a video, and that's now available on YouTube. So my YouTube handle is The Hubbocks. Or you can get me via Google Plus, I think. If you log on to Google Plus, you can click on my YouTube tab on my profile page, and you can get to my YouTube videos that way. But anyway, there's like 3 hours, 5 minutes or something of just raw footage. And what I'm in the process of doing is editing it down into manageable chunks of days. I've got them set out into days. So I've got some editing to do, about 5-6 hours editing. but I'll be uploading some more refined versions. Even though I think just about everything that I've uploaded is really pertinent and important and nice to see, actually. I mean, just about, but that's come from a personal perspective. So what have I learnt? I've learnt a few things. You need a support crew, or if you haven't got a support crew, then do extend the time you're going to do the walk. If you're going on a multi-day hike like that, extend the time and shorten the length per day. Shorten the amount of miles you're going to do per day. Our mileage was, our planned mileage was 20, 20, 23, 15, 15. What it was in reality was 22, 17, 31, 15, and about 8.5, something like that. That day three was 30, it was a few hundred yards short of 31 miles. And that was a beast. That was a beast. So in the future, what I'll probably not do is I won't go anywhere near 20 miles, actually. So that's one thing that I've learned. The other thing I've learned is make sure that if you go and walk with anybody, which I did, I believe, you know, please, Dean, point me wrong if I am, but good communication with the person or the people that you're walking with. And Dean and I would like to think, and I would like to believe that Dean and I talked about all of our plans, our contingency plans, our plans B and C, and that's another point. Make sure you've got contingency plans, definitely. Make sure your support crew's well briefed. Don't take anything that you're not going to need. I had a few things that I was never going to need, so don't take it. So do travel as light as you can. Box clever. Don't be carrying 3 litres of water if you don't really need it. If you've got a water filter, I'm not endorsed by, but I highly recommend the Sawyer range of water filters. So go and spend 20 quid on a water filter, and then, you know, en route you can plan getting water at streams or any other kind of water points. Make sure you plan what food you're going to eat. Make sure you're going to have enough energy within the food to power yourself. I did, and Dean did as well. So make sure you got that. Make sure you know your limitations as well. And the example of that was me stopping twice to say, right, we've got to go into plan B, and we've now got to stop properly because I need medical attention. So I knew my limitations. But overall, enjoy it. You know, I would advocate taking lots and lots of photographs. More than video. You might not want to bog yourself down with taking video, but take lots and lots of pictures. And that was our adventure. I want to say thank you very, very much to Dean for putting up with me. I don't think I whinged too much, but Dean, thanks very much. Thanks for being really supportive along the way, and just being a good egg. Dean Reed, I'd never met him before in the flesh. What a nice person he is. So down to earth, so proper, I couldn't have wished for a better person to walk along with. And also Adrian Wicks, on day one, what a really nice person to go out of his way to come and walk with us, to go out of his way especially to come and pick us up from Whitley Bay and take us back to my parents. Really nice conversation, and it's just great meeting people. I mean, I've met Adrian before, but very briefly, but it's really great meeting people that you generally only listen to. And I've watched all of Dean's videos on YouTube, so it was great to meet him in the flesh. What nice people Dean and Adrian are. Sorry, it's getting to that time of night now. I've got to go and take somebody to the airport in a minute. So I just want to thank you all, and I especially want to thank my parents as well. My dad, who'd committed his week to supporting us, where I know he'd cancelled work Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of that week. Originally he was only going to be able to support us for Monday and Tuesday. So I'm really happy that he did that. And my mother for, supporting him and supporting us with food and company whenever we were home at my parents. A great week. And the start, seeing as I'm not moving, I'm going to be staying here for a while now. So the start of being able to plan more multi-day treks. So I've already done a load of audio boos whilst I was on the go, and I've saved those as a playlist on my audio boo channel. So you can go and listen to those. This has been a bit of a monster. 52 minutes so far, nearly 53 minutes. If you've got this far, thanks ever so much for listening. And to all of those people who tweeted us along the way with all your nice comments, we really appreciate that, Dean and I. I would relay to Dean whenever we got something through. So thank you ever so much for your support via social networks, whether it was Twitter or Facebook or Google Plus, whatever you were doing. Thanks very much. And also I want to say a personal thanks again to Adrian and Dean for the nice things that they said about my parents. I've told them, and I've sent my mother the hyperlinks to their public audio boos. So she said they were lovely lads, those two, weren't they? Aye. Okay, what a monster. Probably one of the longest audio boos I've done, actually. Thanks very much for listening. I've got to take someone to the airport. Going to be leaving in the next 20 minutes. So, hope you have a lovely weekend, everybody. The weather is apparently going to be good, although it's overcast here. It hasn't been that good today in South Wiltshire. But nevertheless, whatever you're doing, have a good one. Take care, all the best.
All one word. One word. Out. Out. Out.